accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. All right, let's welcome Gloria G. from Long Beach. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Gloria Gorbel, and I'm an alcoholic. And I want to thank Mike for asking me to come. I want to thank Marcia for welcoming me. And, you know, I am by no means uncomfortable about anything that's happened earlier this evening. It's interesting how I was interrogated at the beginning, too, by the bugger or whatever he wanted to call himself. It's all good, though. TMZ is fine. At least I watched that, so I'll be able to catch myself, perhaps. I've been taught to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I want you to think I'm like today. So, I am freezing, so this jacket's not coming off. I got a short-sleeved shirt on. I'll tell you that my sobriety date is February 21st, 1993. My sponsor's Carla Rao, my home group's Bellflower Big Book. Those may not mean anything to you, and maybe they mean something to you, and it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is those are three things that I've always had since I came in this last time. I came in at Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, and I'll share a little bit about that. You know, I am forever grateful for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the steps as they are outlined in that big book. It's funny, you know, Marcia was worried about what I might convey back to the group. Look, I just got elected secretary for Bellflower, and once you hear my story and kind of see who I am, you'll be like, wow, how'd that happen? Because I'm still shocked by it, honestly. But, you know, it's a matter for me, I guess, of just, of honestly being privileged and showing up and doing Alcoholics Anonymous the way I was taught. You know, I got to tell you that I'm not alcoholic because of what my parents did or didn't do for me. You know, I'm an only child. My parents divorced when I was a kid. We lived with my grandparents. I'm half Mexican. I grew up in Compton, Norwalk, and Stanton. If you haven't left this area, those are prestigious neighborhoods in my place. And, you may have gone there to pick something up. I don't know. But anyway, I'll tell you the biggest thing for me is that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with all those things. This is why I'm alcoholic. This is why this is, well, you know, poor me, you know, oh my gosh, if you were me. And what's funny is the reality of it is, and once I got a little sober and I was able to start to work those steps, I got to find out that I lived in a wonderful home. My mom provided for me. My grandparents were good people. My grandmother stayed home all day and took care of me, you know, made sure I got to school and I got to swim lesson and I got to do all those things. There was never any yelling in my house. They had arguments outside, and they were whispers outside like this, you know, and whispering still bothers me, like, speak up, you know, what are you saying? You know, I was nosy, I still am, you know, and I'd be at the back screen listening to my grandparents whispering like this and having conversation, and they'd go, Gloria, we'll be in just a minute, and that was like their argument, and it was like, that's all you got? You know, what? No one threw anything. No one yelled, no one used God's name, good or bad, in that house. No one was shoving it down my throat, and no one was cursing and using his name. And I'll tell you that I would grow up to do the opposite of all those things. And I'm still trying to perfect not doing all those things. But in that type of household, you know, it was, I had a good life. I had a good upbringing. I was taught morals and values. And I went to Catholic school until they asked me not to come back. And because I like to have fun. And my dad would come and pick me up on the weekends that he had me when he remembered. And I can say that today because that's just the truth. That's the way it was. You know, my dad likes to drink. I don't pronounce anyone alcoholic. My dad likes to drink. I like to drink, too. I just can't. You know, but when he'd pick me up, he'd take me to places like the Witch's Brew. And he'd set me up at a table over in the corner, get me a Shirley Temple, give me some quarters to play the jukebox and pinball machine. And I sat back like I do still in AA, and even when I was drinking, and sit back in the corner and observe and watch what's happening and size everybody up and figure it out, you know. And I'll tell you that my dad ran with guys with beards and long hair, and they rode bikes, not bicycles. And, you know, they looked, you know, everyone, my mom would always be nervous around people like that, but they were just warm and welcoming to me. They were kind to me. They give me quarters, you know, I drop them in the jukebox, play Afternoon Delight, that'll tell you how old I am. And, you know, I had no idea what that song was about, you know. I still like that song, and it's on my iPod, you know. Kind of get one of those moments where I go, you know, happy place, you know. I sat in that bar, and I remember a few things, and one was that I always watched people would sit at the bar and lean in and have these intimate conversations with the bartender, and sometimes they'd cry, and I was just intrigued by it, like, what's going on? You know, and then they'd have a few drinks, and then they'd be laughing, and it was like, oh, well, look, she fixed her. Look at that, you know, all right. You know, she'd leave with somebody, well, now she's happy. Good job, you know, whatever. I was a kid. You know, I didn't understand, but I was just, my dad would throw money on a pool table and shoot pool with people, and sometimes he'd put it in his pocket, and sometimes he wouldn't. And, you know, and I would just watch. And then when something would go wrong, and it was like, hey, you know, all these guys would walk outside with a bunch of other guys, kind of like in a herd. It looked like something was going to go down. Of course, I want to follow them. They'd be like, stay inside. My dad would be like, out the back door, we're out of here. You know, because there was a fight about to break out, and, you know, the cops are going to come, and you're not supposed to have a five-year-old in a bar. That's why they kept me over by the pinball machine. You weren't allowed to go near the pool table or the bar. Because I remember I'd get close, because I'd want to hear you. And they would go, Gloria, I just want another Shirley Temple, please. You know, and you're not supposed to be in there. But I'll tell you this, that when I went home, and my mom would say, how was your weekend? I'd never told my mom really how my weekend was. I would say, it was okay. Just hung out. Never telling her that I went to the bar, because she's a buzzkill. She'd kill that. My mom is straight and narrow, doesn't cross the double line, you know, has a beer, and because it's new and she wants to try it, and I'm like, have another? Catch it. You're there. Get it. Oh, no, I'm good. I'm going to have a Coke now. Why? You know, the drink is too strong. Chug it. Order another one. And she just... She's not one of us, you know. And I say that because I took care of my mom. She had a surgery, and she came to my house with all these pills. I don't care. And she laid them out, and I said, well, you should take that one because you're going to be in pain when that wears off, whatever that is. And, so take it now so you won't feel it. And she was, no, I'm okay. I took an aspirin. No. I'm telling you, when that numb wears off, you know, you need to take that. And she kept, no, I'm good. Please just take it, because I don't want you to cry later. And she goes, you know what, I'm not like you. And that is so true. We are not alike at all. My mother would be appalled that I even talk about anything about her from a podium. She's always concerned when I have to go to Lancaster or if someone asks me to talk somewhere. She's like, don't they have speakers there? Why do you have to drive so far? Or she'll say, do you want me to go with you? No. I'm cool riding alone, thanks. But I'll tell you that, like I said, I never told my mom about my weekends with my dad. I just didn't, because I knew, you know, that that would end completely. And I'll tell you a few things that happened for me growing up then was that my dad and I went out one night with a bunch of guys like that and at someone's house, and they drank a lot, I guess, and he was trying to leave, and everybody said, don't, Paul, please don't leave. You know, let Gloria stay here. You go ahead and go if you need to leave, but let her stay here, you know, with the other kids. And he was insistent that I go with him, and we almost got in a wreck. I remember I screamed. And I remember I started praying, and I said, please, God, stop the car. Please stop the car. Please stop the car. And I'll tell you that the car stopped. And for me, that was, I hadn't even had a drink yet. But I knew there was a power greater than me, and I can't explain it. This will happen sooner or later. Let's get it over with now. But that I would start to have a belief in a God that I wouldn't understand and that I still have struggle trying to understand today, you know, that's in my life. And, you know, that car stopped, and my dad passed out, and I took the keys, and I laid in the back seat, and it was in an area where it was just fields and blackness, and I was afraid to get out of the car, and I just stayed there till the sun came up, and he came too, and we walked for miles, you know, and again, when I got home, and my mom said, you know, what'd you do this weekend, that wasn't one of the things I told her about, you know, as I started to get older, you know, my grandmother got sick with cancer and she ended up passing away. And I came home. They sent me to my dad's. I came into the house when I got back and there were flowers and plants all over the living room, just full. And I knew what had happened, that she had died, and I would become angry with my mom up until I got sober and a few years into my sobriety. I was pissed at her because she, you know, didn't allow me to say my goodbyes, didn't allow me to do that. My grandmother was like my mom. She was home with me all day. She was my buddy. I started drinking then. I started drinking with some of my friends. We got in our parents' liquor cabinets and started drinking. And for me, drinking really was just chugging, taking sips with everybody else, just doing what everybody else was doing. But for me, something happened that didn't happen to some of my friends that I'm still in contact with, which is that when I started to take a drink, I wanted more. And the fact that when I drank more, I seemed to like you better. I could tolerate you because I really didn't like being around anybody. Everybody seemed to irritate me. You all did. There was something that was bothersome about you, and I would find it. And when I drank, I didn't care anymore, and you seemed to be okay. And so I sought out drinking as often as I could. I started stealing money from my mom. I started sneaking out my window. I'm about 11 years old. I start going with older kids, and, you know, and it, I mean, 13, 14-year-olds, you know, we're in garages, we're under bridges, we're in parks, we're pimping beer from creepy old men, and, you know, things like that. Or we're doing beer runs. We're running into a stop and go, and we're running out with whatever we could get our hands on and just running as fast as we can to the car or whoever, or to the park or wherever we were going, in a bush to hide until they stopped looking for us. You know, and my drinking started to take off that way, and by the time I'm 13, you know, my mom showed up. Suddenly, I knew all my dad's ex-girlfriends, because they were all exes, but I knew all of them, and I never met anyone my mom dated, and all of a sudden, there was this guy that came into our lives, and he was a little guy from Depew, Oklahoma, and he wore a Wranglers and a straw hat in the summer, and a felt hat in the winter, and boots, and he was little, and I just thought, who is this? And he was, because he was a jockey, like, you know, he rode a horse, and it was just like... Who's this lop? You know, and I was like, what? Mom was like, oh, you know, and all of a sudden he was in our lives. And I just thought, oh, yeah, I'm not. And I wasn't happy already. And so I was just an angry little kid. And, you know, they're trying to encourage me to go and go to these rodeos where, you know, he'd get on a bull and try to hang on to it. And I'd hope he'd fall off and it'd hit him. You know, I was always like, yeah, you know, and everyone's like, you know, I was just an ugly, mean little girl. And, you know, but the biggest thing I remember is when we'd pull up in that motorhome to go to these things, I would always say, I need to go to the bathroom, I need to go do something, and I would sneak into the liquor cabinet there and chug whatever they had. And those jockey kids would watch me and say, you're not supposed to do that. And I would say, don't worry about it. And they were like, okay. You know, they'd get all scared, or I'd find cigarettes, and I'd relight them and smoke on them, and they'd be like, and I'd just look at them like, what? You know, throw up your calf or whatever it is you're going to do, you know. And they were wanting me... You need to barrel race. No, I don't. I want to run around a barrel and time me. I still don't get that. But anyway, or rope in the calf, three legs. Why? Why? Why do you want to rope him? Leave him alone. The kids would take me, and then we would go ride horses, and we would come back. And I don't know. I didn't own a horse, you know. And they would say, well, we're going to take the saddle off and brush the horse. And I remember I would, like, find a cigarette, and I would light one, and I would be like, oh, not my horse, man. You know, like, and it would be the attitude I would have about everything. Like, what? You invited me. I'm a guest. I was always like all indignant about it. Like, what? And these kids were just like, oh, she is evil. And they would just do whatever, you know. And no one ever said, go ahead and brush the horse, you know, because I'd give you that look that I got for a long time that I kept with me that just looked right through you. Like, what? What do you need? You need something? You know? And they were just like, oh. They go, oh, you guys have fun? Uh-huh. And they would all, like, run off together, and I'd just stand there and say, I'm not feeling good. I'm going to go lay down. And I'd go back into the trailer, and I'd drink whatever I could get my hands on. You know, I can't say that I became alcoholic out of a trailer, although that sounds like a great story in AA. But what happened for me was that it wasn't enough. And I started sneaking out more, and I started hanging out with people that were a lot older than me, and I found a girlfriend that her mom let me come stay with her. I basically ran away across Beach Boulevard into a place called Crow Village. And it's where she lived, and her mom didn't question who I was because I seemed to be this upright girl who brought her daughter home every night. She didn't used to come home, so I had a moral, at least. We're going home. You know, and for me then, it was all about kegger parties and beer bongs and quarters in a garage. Listen to 2112, you know. Twilight Zone was like a song in my head because I was usually in a bucket by then puking, you know, and they would just rub my hair and say, it's going to be okay, you know, and I'm laying there and just a hot mess. I either blackout, pass out, or throw up. I've been a blackout drinker from the start. And if I don't remember, then it didn't happen as far as I was concerned throughout my drinking. You know, it made the inventory a little shorter, not much. However... You know, I'm 13. I've run away from home. I'm gone for about 6 or 9 months. My mom and I can't really figure that out. It was a good stint, you know, and literally across the highway. My mom would come look for me, and I would dodge her and run. And she knew I was over there somewhere, but, you know, my mom is not the Hispanic one. She is a white one, so she didn't really fit in that neighborhood. You know, and what would end up happening for me was that, you know, I had older guys that looked out after me and made sure things that can happen to girls like me didn't happen. Those guys made sure that no one touched me, no one bothered me. When I passed out, they put me in a room, and they watched that room and made sure nobody went in there. Things that I know don't really happen today. It's a, you know, those guys would tell me, go home, little girl, and I'd just try to drink more to show them I belonged there. And eventually I bumped into a friend whose mom saw me, and she asked me if I was tired. And I was. I had a close scrape, and I agreed that I was tired. And she said I could come live with them. And she would talk to my mom. And so she reached out to my mom, and her son had gone through a care unit and was allegedly sober, but we all knew he wasn't. And I moved in with them, and I shared a room with his sister. And honestly, I just took a rest. I just needed to catch my breath. And I started going back to school. I was going to continuation school because junior highs had kicked me out. And I would get on a bus and sit next to my first ex-husband. He would bring a fifth of whatever he found in his parents' liquor cabinet. And I know that to be true today because I've met the bus driver. And she confirmed that, yes, you guys drank and smoked and did whatever you wanted on the bus. But she'd look at us when we got on, and we'd get on. She'd never look in the mirror. And she explained to me I needed to get where I was going so that I could drink. I would barely get off that bus. Those guys would carry me off the bus to go to class, you know, getting credit for reading Rolling Stone and listening to Iron Maiden is basically all I did at that time. And my drinking started to progress again, you know, and one more time I can't figure out who I am, you know. I mohawked my hair. I started hanging out down in Five Points. I started trying to sneak into clubs down in Huntington. I'm hanging out with a bunch of crazy people that are just, you know, just angry and want to just rip everything apart. And, you know, and that's the way I felt. I was angry and I was ready to rip everybody apart. And my drinking continues that way again, just in a garage. No big deal. I didn't feel like I was hurting anybody. We're all in the garage together. And one day my mom showed up at that house, and my suitcase was packed there, and they said, you're going to the care unit. And I just didn't even care. You know, I was almost 15, and I just said, okay. They took me to the care unit in Bellflower, down the street from where my home group is today, and it was an adolescent unit. It was me and one other guy, so immediately I had a boyfriend. And, you know, until she showed up from Henderson, and then he had a new girlfriend. And, you know, I learned about the disease of alcoholism there, and again, this is my experience. I was in that place for 30 days. When I was drinking in a garage, no one ever explained, hey, a blackout is when you keep moving and things are happening and you don't remember anything. No one knew what that was. They'd say, do you remember what you did last night? And I'd go, yeah. Uh-huh. Why? You know, and it was always like, you know, and someone would always feed you that little bit where you're like, piece it together. Or you had one good friend that would just spill it. Wow, this is what happened last night. You know, or you were really funny. Great. In that carrying, I learned about the blackout. I learned about the disease of alcoholism. You know, I learned, they taught me to, you know, find the similarities. And back then, we'd go down into a basement, and there were a bunch of old men smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, eating donuts, and I figured we smoked. That's it. There's my similarity with you. I got nothing else in common with you. You know, I got out of that care unit with a really expensive big book. And I went back to the old playground, the old playmates, and I didn't have any numbers to call, and I didn't go to any meetings, and I just didn't drink for 11 months. And I went back to regular high school and did well, and ended up getting a boyfriend who was fairly normal, you know. You know, one thing after another for me when I hang out long enough, and, you know, I hang out with people that do what I do is the bottom line. And after a period of time with no foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous and nothing, you know, at 11 months, I picked up a drink. And I know what not to do now because I've learned so much at the care unit. And, you know, my drinking picked up again, and I just drank Friday through Sunday, you know, and figured that's not hurting anybody. I'm going to school. I'm doing what I'm supposed to. I was big hair, head banging in the pit, concerts, you know, and again, just thought, no big deal. We're all having fun. It's not a big deal. You know, my mom had kicked me out by the time I'm 16, so I guess it was a big deal. Things were happening, and she was bothered by it. And that boyfriend had a house behind his parents' house in Tustin, and I moved in with him. And I'd take the bus to Garden Grove to go to school. I'd work at the flower shop over there. And then I drank Friday through Sunday. And I had a Mervyn's credit card, and I cleaned house, and I baked, and I did laundry. And I felt like, I've arrived. I'm doing this. I'm an adult. I graduated early from high school, a whole semester early, with a, 1.8 grade point average. Victory. And my husband is a teacher and has assured me that today you can't do that. But back then you could. And I had no desire to continue on in education. I needed to just go on and do something. And usually it was party. Because by now I'm hanging out with people that have businesses, their own sales business. And I start hanging out with a lot of these people and start running for people and doing things. But my drinking has taken off because I have all day to do it now. And I like to drink. And I drink anything you got. And it doesn't matter anymore what happens. I had all these guys that I grew up with in the neighborhood that just watched out for me. They just made sure, that if I fell down, they picked me up and propped me up somewhere, and allowed me to drink the way I wanted to drink. That boyfriend ended up kicking me out because that first ex-husband was his best friend. And so it didn't go so well when he realized, what's going on over here? And I'd moved back into my mom's house because I figured I'd left at 16. She owed me 2 years. You're supposed to stay with your parents till you're 18. So in my mind, I had this plan that we're going to work off these 2 years. I didn't really mean to. I didn't really want to go live with mom. But when you got nowhere else to go, you figure, you owe me, was kind of my attitude with her. And she didn't realize that until I was sober and we were talking about it one day playing cards. And she was like, what do you mean I owed you? And I said, well, I moved out when I was 16 and you're supposed to stay with you until you're 18. She's like, what? No, you weasel your way back in. And I was like, I'm good at that, huh? Yeah. And that's what I'd do. Every time I'd weasel my way back in, there was always some excuse or something that I needed. And I played that guilt card on her. I'm your only daughter. I'm your only blood. You got to help me. Again, my drinking just keeps going. I can't stop it. It becomes it's the first thing I think about when I wake up, and it's what I pass out to at night. I can't stop for anything. I end up with my first ex-husband, and we grew up together, and we had no business being together. I loved him, and I hated him at the same time. And he was one of those guys that would constantly be on me about, where are you going? Why are you wearing makeup? What's that? Why are you wearing that? He talked a lot. Like, just shut up. You ask too many questions. None of your business. And I wasn't doing anything then. I just wanted to go drink. And I'm the type of person that I'm not the whisperer, so I'm the yeller. And if you can't hear me, I'm just going to like hands on you so that you understand what I'm saying. And it's usually not with any of the women. It's usually with the men. Like, what'd you say? And I'm coming at you. And with him, he would, back then, he would grab his pager. Ask someone next to you what that is. And he would open the little safe and grab whatever he had, and he would, use the house phone to call and say, she's flipping out, I'm on my way over there. And he would leave in the truck, and the cops would show up, and they would say, are you okay? And I would say, yes, he's gone. And they would say, okay, well, if he comes back, let us know. And I'd say, okay. And I'm the one that's tore the house up. I'm the girl that, when you keep talking and you don't show up, I got my key, and I'm just all against your car staring at you like, what? And you're like, oh, crazy, because I am. I'm the one that grabs that 80s wall unit that you put all your prized possessions on and standing there holding it and just go, and then I come at you, because you're so worried about what's falling, and then I can get a hold of you. And he and I had I'll tell you, this man was 6 foot tall and he never laid a hand on me. I deserved to get my butt whooped a few times, and he just split. I'm not dealing with this. And I just kept drinking. And then I start calling him and paging him, get home, because I'm not done. I got something to say, I'm so grateful that social media was not around when I was drinking. I would have to shut my page down. It would not be any good. My drinking continues like that. And in January, I get pregnant. I'm about 19. We get married in April. I miscarry in May. He gets busted in June. And he's put me up in a house in Reno Valley because I don't want to be around his business anymore. I'm one above everyone now because I'm looking down on you, all my friends that are coming to him for whatever you need. And I've got all this stuff. I got all this jewelry. I got these big trucks. I got these Rottweilers. I got these fish tanks. I got the stereo. I got the big TV. I got all this stuff. And I sit at home and I drink and I invite everybody up to Moreno Valley for the weekend to just party, you know, while he's working. And, you know, and my mom doesn't say anything. She's just like, huh. You know, back then, Price Club, you know, we're in there and he's paying cash and she's like, and he goes, I got it, you know, and she's just like, oh, I don't understand what's going on. Don't worry about it, Mom, you know. And she joked with me the other day. She said, well, remember, he cleans carpets. That's what you guys told me. Yes, he did. We had a carpet machine. It was valid. And I remember turning to her saying, and your carpet was very clean, wasn't it? And she said, well, actually it was. That man ended up turning himself in the day after I turned 21 in January. And the day after he left, you know, he's of no use to me anymore. And you know, now it's a burden on me and I got all this stuff to take care of. And I got a dog that's got puppies and I don't know what I'm doing. I barely make it home. I'm working at Home Depot by then just because I wanted to get out of the house before all this started. You know, I'm doing okay there, and I end up moving from cashier into the back, into the vault to open the store up in the morning and stuff. And if you're a drunk like me, you just can't make it to work on time to open up the store. It's a little difficult. I'm more of a night owl. I could close the store real good, but opening was not such a good idea. And bottom line is I end up leaving him, going back to my mom's. I hook up with one of the guys at Home Depot, and he and I drank alike. And he was one of the first guys I met that drank like me. And we'd do this to drive home from the bar. Ah, you get it. Yeah. You know, in the book, people feared for our sanity. I remember his buddy was a bartender, and he'd be like, why don't you guys just let me close the bar, and I'll drive you guys home. Yeah, we got this. You know, we were embarrassing, I'm certain of it. In clubs dancing and stuff. I mean, I'm a headbanger and I'm in a club dancing now. Way too much Soul Train when I was a kid, so I don't know what it looked like. And again, I'm glad no one was videotaping back then. But I got my first DUI with him passed out in the front seat, so I blame him. And I got pulled over in Huntington. We were leaving Bennigan's. The cop, I rolled the window down, and I remember him saying, have you had anything to drink? And I said, no, one. And I'm sure we reeked between the two of us. And he said, can you step out of the car? And I wanted to say, no, well, actually, I can't, you know. And I remember I got out of the car, and he started doing the field sobriety test. How many letters in the alphabet? I was like, I don't know, you know. I still struggle, like, wait, what is it again? You know, I'm like, you know. And he said, can you say them backwards? Why? Who does that? You know, and I was just like, I wanted to go, uncle, I give up. All right, you know. And he let him go. I don't even know how he got home that night, but I got taken into Huntington Beach Jail. It's real pretty. Crying doesn't get you out of it. I got locked in there, and I stayed the night, and I do what I know how to do, is I command everyone to show up, and my mom and my boyfriend both show up at the door outside that Civic Center in Huntington Beach. And I give you both that look of like, okay, one of you is getting screwed, and it's usually my mom. But I need backup all the time, because I'm not sure if you're really there for me or not. I don't trust anybody, so I got to have two of you show up all the time. And my mom's got to be in L.A. to work, and I remember her just looking at me like, why am I here? You know, and at the time I don't realize, well, you're the backup, Mom. And in case he didn't show up, you know, I just was like, oh, I'm going to go Steve. And she's like, oh, okay. You know, I end up having to go to court, and I end up having to go to school 10 and come to AA meetings. Yay. And I'm one of those people that came to AA meetings late. I sat in the back. I'd be a little buzzed, or I'd come buzzed and sit up front. I found you guys really entertaining. I felt sorry for you. This is what you chose to do on a Friday night. It was just my stop on my way out, you know, to get the card signed and go back to them and turn it in and do my business with them. And I knew how to play that game. I had that care unit stuff in my head. So I was like, yeah, I got a little bit. I can speak the language, if you will. So I would talk real good game, you know. You're not supposed to drink when you're, you know, on probation. We're good. My friends ended up getting me a job at an aerospace company. And I remember I was going to El Torito to have a Cadillac and a taco. And I don't know how long I was there. I remember coming out of a blackout, a little fuzzy, wrestling with one of the little gals that had my keys. And again, I sized you up. She was small enough. I could take her. And I got my keys from her, and I got in my car, and I left. And I got on the 405 from Lakewood to drive to Huntington. And I came out of that blackout twice. I came out alongside El Dorado Park and the ice plant in my car. It hadn't flipped. It just kind of rolled down into it. And I was dressed like I am tonight. And I came out of the blackout one more time, coming over the chain link fence, and the sheriff helping me. I came out of the blackout one more time, cuffed, sitting in the main jail. And I remember getting my phone call and calling that boyfriend saying I'm in Huntington. And she said, you're at the main. And I remember exactly what I said to him. You need to come and get me. I don't belong here. And he came to get me, and I remember the look of disgust he had on his face with me. And I just thought, it's a 20-minute ride, and I can take whatever he's got. And he said nothing, which is worse as far as I'm concerned when I don't say a word to you and you're waiting. And I just thought, I just need to go lay down. He threw clothes at me and said, you reek. Sleep on the couch. And in the morning, I do again what I know how to do, is I command everybody to take care of my business. Someone's got to get my car out of impound. Somebody's got to get me a lawyer. I violated probation. I'm in trouble. And everyone has to do what I need them to do because I can't take care of myself. You know, mom got the car out of impound. He hired the lawyer. And I get the police report that states exactly who I am. You know, this is a few months later. I get the police report and it states that I reek of alcohol and urine. You know, I know. It's sad. I'll tell you that I don't reek like urine tonight or alcohol. Maybe hand sanitizer. You know, and I remember reading that and thinking, how is that possible? What happened? What? And I remember it talked about, like, I was on the other side of El Dorado Park. It's like, why didn't you run? Why just stay with the car, dummy? You know, and all I kept thinking was, and it says, someone called and said that someone had driven off the road. And I thought, well, who's the rat? Who's the snitch? Leave me alone. You know, and I was obsessed with finding out, who was this? Don't you have to tell me who it was? And, you know, that lawyer had to go. And again, I had that boyfriend pay that lawyer for the easier, softer way. You know, they wanted me to do some time. I'd done some damage to the park, and God knows, I could have killed somebody. And I ended up having to do, 30 days in the county jail. That's it. Not a big deal. But I'll tell you that I turned myself in with that mom and boyfriend, and I remember I started to size up everybody as they came in to turn themselves in, and I sent them away. I said, you guys need to go. Because I do what I know how to do, which is just get into whatever position we're going to do and play the game, wherever we're going. And I start acting like I know what's going to happen next. And just rolling and my eyes looking, glazing over you and looking through you like, yeah, I know what's up. And getting into this main zoo that they put me in and just realizing, I got to get out of here. You know, I ended up in a working dorm that was all glass. I have to back up. I started going to meetings in Costa Mesa, and I got a sponsor to start taking me to the 12 and 12. Because I knew I was in trouble. I started going to AA to try to get the heat off and help that jail sentence. And I remember that when I went to turn myself in, she had told me to write down everything I'd take to the grave. She called that an inventory. And so I get in this jail, and I tell you that because they come to visit me. And I'm wearing pants and a smock, and I'm better than you because you're in a jumpsuit. And I'm in a working dorm, all glass. I got the TV and the phone 24/7. I'm working. I work nights sweeping the holding tanks where you are. And giving you the look like I'm better than you. And, only in jail, really, I'm better than you. I remember that sponsor came to visit me and she was like, have you written anything down? I said, I'm really busy. I have a job. I work. You know, I learned how to play hearts. I still can't play that. And dodgeball one-on-one, you know. It's a tedious game, but you got to move quick. And that boyfriend would come see me and my mom, and they would just look at me funny, like, what is going on with you? And I was so concerned about commissary and sponge rollers and getting some makeup. And, you know, I learned to enjoy the payday candy bar. I never knew what that was. This is fabulous, you know. And laughing. I'd never laughed so hard before. I honestly, before I came to AA, I laughed my hardest in there. But I'll tell you, in that working dorm, I was with girls that were going to prison. They weren't there for a DUI. And I remember those girls saying, how much time are you doing? And my response to them is always a lie, and it's, my case is pending. And unlike AA, in jail they're not nosy, and they don't ask you, what case? You know, in AA we're like, who's your sponsor? Why are you talking to her? How much time do you have? What's your home group? What step are you on? You know, I got out of that jail, and I had about 10 months sober by then. And in a short period of time, I started drinking again. And I would continue my drinking for another 4 or 5 years until I turned 25. And I ran through everybody and everything. My relationships with men were, you know, my high school sweetheart 5 years, and it was 4 years, 3 years, 2 years, 1 year. I thought we were in a relationship. You were my neighbor. We went to the same bar. You know, by then I can't drink hard liquor because I become violent. I'm drinking beer only. Killian's Red, drinking it latkes in Huntington. And by then I think I'm the stuff, you know, because everyone knows my name in the bar. It was fabulous. And I start looking around, and all the new guys that would come in, I know who's new in the bar, who's from the neighborhood, and I start hustling you at the table. That's the one thing I learned how to do, is I could hustle you. I can't keep a job, so I've got to hustle you somehow. And I play pool with you, and I play dumb, and, you know, and I either, you know, win the game, or I try to steal your wallet, or I let you buy me beer. You know, I remember when the when the treasurer said to put what you paid for your first drink. I didn't pay for my first drink, but that's not what you should do here. I'm just saying. I put $2 in. I hustled to drink is what I did because I'm a big loser and I can't hold a job and do anything. And when I get a final paycheck, which is usually what it is, that big final paycheck from someone when they let you go, is I go blow it at the bar to show everybody how great I am and how I'm going to pay everybody back. And, of course, now you owe me. So you will now buy me drinks, you know, for the next few months because I won't have a job. Again, that continues on and on and on. And by the time I'm 25, it's around this time at Christmas. I'm hanging out with people I can't stand. We all do the same thing. We rise at about 5 or 6 at night, and we go back into the hole about 8 in the morning. And I'm living at my mom's house, and I'm leaving before she comes home from work, and I'm arriving back after she's left for work. And all she sees maybe is a wet towel and maybe some toast crumbs or something from me being there, but nothing else. She has no idea what I look like or what's happening, and I think that I'm not harming you or doing anything wrong to you. You don't see me. And I can assure you that that is far worse to a family member to not know what's going on with you, and you're right there, and they sense you're there, but they don't know what's really going on anymore. Hanging out with these people I can't stand, and I end up at a party. I ended up at a club, they called it a club, the 5902 Club down in Huntington. It was disco night. I'll never forget it. It was Christmas Eve. And I go do this with all my girlfriends. And, you know, in the big book, it talks about it. And I remember one of my meetings when I came, and I started to get it, was when they talked about humiliating and demoralizing, and that was that Christmas Eve. You know, and I remember I came to in the morning, and my dear friend had taken my car and wouldn't return my calls, and it's Christmas Day. And remember, I'm an only child, and my mom's sitting at home alone waiting for me. And, you know, the gifts under the tree from my mom that year were little promise notes of crap. It's really what they were, that said, this is good for gardening, this is good for a lunch that I don't have any money to pay, but I'll go with you. And, you know, just stuff like that. I got nothing to give her because all my money goes for drinking. I can't pay for anything. And I'm stuck at this house with these guys I can't stand and trying to act like I'm okay and nothing happened. And I remember that those keys came, you know, later in the evening. I had fallen asleep and the keys showed up on the coffee table and I drove home. My mom was already in bed. And, you know, I'll tell you that I don't think my mom and I ever talked about that night. I remember that night because it was one of those times where for a brief moment I said, wow, what's happening? This isn't what I want to live like, and I wasn't raised this way. I'd love to tell you that I stopped drinking that day, but I didn't. I powered on for another 2 months, and you know, I DT'd at my mom's house on my birthday, my 21st, it was my 25th birthday, and I shaked and baked at my mom's, and I honestly thought I had contracted something and I was dying, and literally, my mom thought I had the flu. I couldn't hold anything down, and I remember we went to the store, and I was like, well, it's my birthday. Are you going to buy me a cake? And she said, no, I don't eat cake, and you know, it was one of those moments, you know, when you're a kid and you throw things in the cart. The 25-year-old daughter is rolling with you trying to throw stuff in the cart for herself, you know, and my mom would just look at me and say, I don't need that. You know, and I started babysitting for a friend from high school who hadn't seen me in years. She had no idea who I was and what I was about and how crazy I was. Her and her husband I grew up with, and He had tried to help me out a few times. I'm not a good salesman. I trade it for my drinking stuff, you know. And he was hiding out or drying out somewhere up in the valley, and she needed someone to watch her little girl. And so I started watching her, and I think she watched me. But, you know, she knew how to take care of herself. And we sat at the house, and Diane told me, you know, help yourself to anything to eat, and I'll feed you, and I'll pay you $40 a week. That's all she could afford. I had no business watching that little girl. But I did. And they went to go visit him, took the train up there, and I remember I was waiting for the train. I went to go pick him up, waiting for the train to come back, and I had my pager, and the train was late, and I ended up in a bar. I don't know if it was Santa Ana or Fullerton. I just know it was a Spanish-speaking bar. I'm half Mexican. I don't speak Spanish. And but I can order beer there. You can order beer anywhere as far as I'm concerned. And I ordered that pitcher of beer, and I sat back, and I started putting some quarters in the pool table and started looking around to see who we could hustle. And I looked to my left, and there was a blonde-haired kid in there, and I thought, well, what's he doing here? And I remember walking over to impress him. Hi, you want to shoot game of pool? And he was like, no. And I remember thinking, well, wait a minute, didn't you see me? You know, hey, you want to shoot game of pool? You know, and he said no, and he leaned over to make a shot, and his necklace popped out with a circle and a triangle, and I knew what that was. And I said, how much time you got? And he said, 45 days. And I said, I've been sober. And I'm sure he was impressed with, like, that pitcher of beer sitting there. And he goes, cool. He's like, that's nice. I said, sure, you want to shoot game of pool? And he's like, no. I got the page that the train was coming, and I wrote my name and number down. And I walked outside, and for me, this is when God shot started happening again for me, just like that car stopping with my dad. I walked outside. I don't know why I didn't walk over to the pool table, slap it down, and say, you'll want to call me. But I walked outside, and I put it on his car, and I assumed it was his car. It had a bumper sticker. It said, keep coming back. Figured he was the only guy in the bar with the necklace on. It must be him. And I'll tell you what happened is that he called. He called my mom's house. My mom said, someone called at 9 o'clock and apologized for calling so late. Who was that? I said, oh, it's Jason. He's sober. And I remember the look on her face. And from what penitentiary? You know, I started bringing people home to introduce to my mother. Oh, it's a so-and-so. Or, what was your name again? You know, and my mom was just like, no, no. And I'll tell you that Jason took me on my first date at the age of 25. I either grew up with you in the neighborhood, or we worked together, we hooked up, or you were my neighbor, whatever. We didn't go on a date first. We just hooked up. We were together. And he picked me up from Norwalk, and he took me to Las Bruces for dinner and took me back to Norwalk and said goodnight. I figured the date didn't go so well. Whatever. And he called me two nights later and asked me out again. And I remember I was getting paid, and I had gotten kicked out of Lodka's for getting into a fight. I was going down to Skeepers, and I said, well, I have plans tonight, but how about tomorrow? And he seemed very excited. Okay, yeah, what do you want to do? And I do what you do until I'm done with you, and then I discard you. And I said, let's go to a meeting. And he was thrilled. Like, oh. I said, yeah, just figure it out, whatever. And wow. And he picked, you know, if I'd have known that night when I went to Skeepers that was going to be it, I ran into the girls, two of them that had tried to help me get me jobs I could never hold on to. My drinking always ended them. They walked in, and I remember holding my beer mug up. And it wasn't a plan. Like, oh, yeah, Jason's going to sober me up. I said, hey, quit everything out. This is next. And from across the bar, that look of like, oh, it's crazy. Oh, it's kind of quiet. You know, and looking away from me. I remember that I wasn't drunk when we got back to Diane's, that I started making phone calls to find somebody to go back out and party with that nobody wanted to. And I was bummed. And I fell asleep instead of passing out after a while. And Jason came to pick me up, and he took me to Thursdays down in Sunset. And I remember exactly what it was. He took me down there. I remember exactly where we sat at the table. I sit there on Saturday mornings, and it was a candlelight meeting, and I thought, how romantic. And the topic was relapse. And I'll never forget that. I can't tell you anything else. I don't even know who was there except for he and I. Otherwise, I don't know anything. I don't know what they shared about or anything. My mind was running 150 miles an hour about everything. You know, I'm barely hanging on at my mom. She's about to kick me out. I've been in and out of AA for 10 years. I got nothing to show for it. I can't hold a job. I got no money. I got creditors after me. I've written hot checks all over town. I've left every job where they fired me. I got nothing. And I can't say that I thought, oh, yeah, AA, this is where I'm supposed to come back. It's not what happened for me. What happened is after a period, I don't know, it was a few days or whatever, you know, is that I started going to Howe Hall with that little girl at noon. And we'd sit up against the wall, and I'd start watching everybody and sizing everybody up. and I stayed away from the women because I didn't trust anybody. And I was watching everybody, and I just thought everybody's too huggy and clingy, and I see what's happening here, and, you know. And honestly, I watched how you acted in the meeting, and I watched how you acted outside. And when it was different, I stayed away from you. And there was a guy in there with long hair and a beard, and his name was Bill White. He's deceased now. That man would raise his hand, and he would share. And everyone seemed to be annoyed with him, and I was annoyed with everybody else. I didn't know what Bill was talking about, so he didn't annoy me. And I had no idea that Bill was talking about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was talking about the steps. And one day, after about 30 or 60 days, I can't remember, it was between 30 and 60, I remember just standing there waiting to talk to Bill, because I couldn't ask for help, I couldn't say, I need help. I just stood there. And he was talking to somebody, and I was waiting for him to finish, and he turned around, and he said, hey, how's it going? I said, good. And he said, I'm Bill, this is Jill. And I remember saying, hi, hey. And, you know, those two took me to Denny's and sat me between them. And Jill sat to this side, and Bill sat here in a U-shaped booth, and you could smoke. And I remember I just puffed away, and those two started talking to me. And he started asking me questions that were none of his business. He started asking me if I had a sponsor. I said, no. He said, Jill, be your temporary sponsor until you can find one. And she looked like she was doing this. And I'll tell you that Jill was younger than me. She was real pretty. She looked too sweet. And I thought, she hasn't been where I've been. And really, she's got like a year. Give me a break. And I'll tell you that gal saved my life. She drugged me. She showed me how to do AA. She didn't tell me how to do it. She showed me. She drugged me everywhere with her. One of my sponsees was going to come with me tonight. We needed to leave at a certain time. She didn't show up. I left. That's what I got to do, you know. She showed me. This is what we do. She took me everywhere with her, and everyone would be like, hi, Jill. All the boys were all, hi, Jill. And I would stand, I'd be standing behind her all. And no one said hi to me. And I was like, whatever. And I was just all rolling my eyes. It just, I thought, why would you keep taking me with you? I obviously hate you. You know? And but she'd just, get in the car, let's go. You know? She got me to write that inventory, you know, and if I can tell you anything tonight, it's the fact that coming in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 years, the only thing I hadn't done was work those steps. I believe today that I'm sober as a result of working those steps. Period. She took me through that. She met me. We go to the beach meeting on Sunday. She sat across from me after that beach meeting and listened to that fifth step. She didn't twitch, flinch, bug out. She started talking about herself, which I thought, I do not need to know that about you. Yikes. She got me on a course of action, really, that was basically, you know, make a phone call, set up an appointment to make an amends to people. It wasn't about showing up at your work, you know, showing up at that ex-boyfriend's house. Hi. Guess what? I'm sober now, you know. I had that list of, like, this is who I want to see. And she was like, no. And I was like, no, really. But it was just a few months ago. And so he will need to know that, like, I'm better now and that I can take care of things. And she was like, yeah, no. No. And I'll tell you, the guy that I wanted to go see first was the guy that said, you know what, you sound like you're doing great, Gloria. I wrote the money off, and good luck. Well, no, but I'm supposed to meet with you face to face so you can see that I'm sober. Some people don't want to meet with you. And I thought, victory, I don't have to pay him back. And Jill said, no, you don't have to pay him back. You're going to put it somewhere else. Well, that sucks. I don't make much money. I'm new, you know. I'll tell you that real quickly because I have a little bit of time, is that I got involved in the Triangle Group in Huntington Beach, and those guys really were about the book. They were thumping that book all day long, and I'm glad for that because that's what I needed. I didn't come here to be cool and make friends and fit in or do anything. I hated you all. I just needed to stay sober, and I was going out of my mind. And they threw me in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous and started showing me how to do stuff, started getting me involved in H&I, started making those amends and making those appointments and doing that stuff. I lived with my mom my first 6 years of my sobriety, not because I thought it was a great idea. It just happened that way. And you know what? I was able to repair and restore a relationship with my mother that I didn't have before. You know, I was able to be a contributor in that home. You know, when my grandfather passed, and it was just she and I, and that guy was gone. You know, I was able to make an amends to my mother. My mother's not down with the amends thing. You know, she gets all uncomfortable. She holds the cat. Oh, Mrs. Kitty Gloria wants to make an amends. Really? I was like, can we turn the TV off for a minute? I just want to talk to you. And she's like, oh, is this that amends thing? You know? This is not a joke. It's what she said. And, you know, I'll tell you what happened is that I got to make an amends to her on a diabetes walk, and it was my sponsor kept saying, you'll know, you'll get a sign from God, it'll come. And we were all the way in, like, Elisa Viejo, my home group's in Huntington, and we're walking, and one of the guys from my home group rides by on a bike in, like, a bicycle outfit, you know, and he's all, hey! And I was like, oh, my God, I need to tell you something. Can you just listen for just a minute? And we're walking, and she's like, shh, I can't get away from her, you know, and I was able to make this amends to her. And I'll tell you that the one thing about my mom is that I hope that when I grow up, I can be like her. She turned to me and said, you know what? I wrote that money off a long time ago. But the money you've gotten from me since you've been sober, you will pay me back. And we did that. It was a list that was kept on the fridge. And, you know, I've had a lot of financial amends that I've had to make. You know, a lot of money that I stole because I steal from you when you don't pay me enough. And we kept that list on the fridge, and then I moved out, and I got married a second time in sobriety, and you know, and then I moved to Long Beach and changed everything in my life, and changed my home group and my sponsor and everything, and realized there wasn't a big deal in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just spoke in the wheel, and you know, I'd have to go. And I told my mom, you know, I wasn't really making much money then, and she said, you know, why don't you come and clean my house? I thought, you're joking, I'm half Mexican, that's not funny. And I used to call myself, I said, I'm Rosa, and I'm coming to clean. And I kept doing that. And I'll tell you that I just got married for the third time. Third is the charm for me. And I married a man that I walk side by side with, not in front of or behind. And, you know, he's got his own home group, and I've got mine. And like our mothers, we don't talk about them. I can talk bad about my group, he can't, and vice versa. But I tell you that because married to him, and then I told Carla, I said, you know, my mom still wants me to come clean the house. I said, it's getting old. I just want to pay her off, man. I got the money. And Carla said to me, she said, you don't get it, do you? Your mom just wants to spend some time with you. And when you come over and do that, she gets to hang out with you. And, you know, and I forget those kind of things. Like, it's not about the money anymore. It's about the time I spend with her. Because my mom was one of those people that said, you make a commitment to AA. What about your commitment to me? When are you going to show up? I've had to learn balance in Alcoholics Anonymous to be able to show up for my family and do AA. I can't be everywhere and do everything in AA. It's just not going to happen. You know, I'll tell you this in close is that, you know, I'm friends with all my exes, which is amazing, considering how crazy I am and the things I've done. I've been able to walk beside this man that I'm married to for almost 5 years. It's the longest I've been married between all of them. And so he's pretty excited about that. You know, he's the opposite of me. He's mellow and I'm like obnoxious. And so it works out nicely. You know, my husband likes to say it in a nice way that we met later in life and we tried to start a family and that didn't work out so well for us. And, you know, along came this little girl that I had no idea was going to show up. And everything's going to change pretty soon. We're going to adopt her. She's three. She's a handful. And my husband believes that I had to have had her. She has the attitude that I do. She told us the other day that I said, well, you have to say you're sorry. We don't talk to people that way. And my husband gave me the look like, oh, really? And not in front of you anyway. And she was like struggling to say I'm sorry, like, and I was just like, oh, my God. She's the empty seat. And she goes, I don't know how to say it in Spanish. And I thought, well, neither do I. That's not the point. Like, what? Where do you come up with this? I say that because I have these moments now in my life that I didn't plan for this. This isn't the way it was supposed to be for me. I shouldn't be your speaker tonight. You know, I haven't been perfect in AA. People know my business. It's okay. I've stayed sober. I've stayed in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've continued to put my hand out to the newcomer, usually the angry woman. Those are the ones I like, you know, because I understand that. I don't understand nice. Like, hi. Hi. You know, I'm able to walk these women through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous like my sponsor has. And one more time, you know, I've been taught now in my 20s is about this emotional sobriety stuff that I really didn't want to know about. But that I'm grateful for. I'm grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life and that I hope that I can pass it on to others. Thanks. All right.